Thursday night edition of the pod, one of our favorite episodes of the year. Top 10 prospects for 2017, 23 and under. We're sponsored today by our friends at Quip Toothbrush. Go to getquip.com/capspace to get your first refill pack for free. Let's start here just by a little bit of criteria, and I'll prevaricate beforehand by saying that we were originally supposed to record this about noon today because we knew there was a Warriors game today that we were both going to at home, and Danny has to write. So it's like, oh, you know, should be about 2 hours. We can like get our list ready. And about noon, Danny, I called you and I was just like, hey, you know what? Like, I can't do it. Like, I'm still agonizing. Like, I need more time. Like, so can you please just like stay up late after the Warriors game and we'll just record then?
And I understood because I went through that process on, I think it was Wednesday when I started my list on Monday, then took a break for 2 days while I was thinking about it and then wasn't comfortable at that point and then redid it again. I think I've redone it twice since then. And that is largely to the credit of these players. Like that, I think that's one of the takeaways of this exercise is that there are a lot of really good players. You're choosing between high-end talents, and you're also choosing between players in a lot of circumstances that are very, very different. And so there is, so I would say, and we'll get into this a little bit more, like there's a top group that there's a little bit less, there's argument more about the order than identity within that. And then after that, you have a lot of eye of the beholder things, what you value in a player that is, you know, probably not going to be a superstar, but chance of superstar is an important component in that. And so I'm interested to see where you went up, turned out, because we did these completely independently, as we always do. And I struggled with it, and I think it helped clarify certain things about how I feel about the league.
Yeah, and there's a lot of criteria here. So before you complain, please remember all of these criteria that we're about to discuss. So the point of this is we're taking which players 23 and under as of February 1st, 2018. That's the Basketball Reference cutoff for determining a player's season age. The reason we choose 23 is that's the year after most players would be a senior in high school or in college. Usually you graduate when you're 22. And 23 to me is the last year that you can credibly kind of say, oh, wow, he's doing all this. And he's only 23 or he's only 19 or he's like, once you say he's only 24, it's kind of like, eh, you know, you're pretty close to being what you're going to be, at least for the average player. Obviously, we've seen some guys blossom later, but just on average, you're kind of getting pretty close to, I mean, you'll make incremental improvements, but it's rare that we'll see just like a total change in the character of what someone is beyond age 23.
Yeah, the way I would put it is it's kind of like if a quarterback is throwing a pass, like you can see the arc of it. You have a pretty good idea of where it's going. There are still things that can blow it off that path, but you have an idea of where it's going.
That's one of the best analogies you've ever done on this show.
Woo!
So here's some of the criteria that we're looking at. Number one is age, right? If you are, the more you are doing something at a younger age, the more impressive it is. You know, if you are a solid starter at age 20, you know, that means much more than being a solid starter at 23. Now, the counter to that is certainty, right? If you've already navigated at age 22, 23, and you've become a star, maybe not a superstar, but a star, that gets you a lot of points too, because you've already reached then. You've made it through another 2 or 3 years without injury. You've made it through another 2 or 3 years without just failing to develop. You know, when we're projecting these guys out, 19, 20 years old, and there are a lot of guys who are new on this list this year with this great 17 draft class, when you're projecting out, you know, that's a projection. If you've successfully, you know, a lot of these guys who were at 19 or 20, we're hoping that they will get to by the point of 22 or 23 where other people already are. And now some of those guys have higher upside, and that's something, you know, it's not a science here. You can, of course, debate what that'll be. And then another thing that really I think has become even more important to me since I started this list, this is, I believe, the fourth edition now of this list, and we can actually go back and maybe track some of the guys over the course of that list as well, but is what position they play, Danny.
Yeah, I mean, you have a bunch of different components of that are important. I mean, but scarcity is a big element of this. I mean, we've dealt with this doing the positional rankings so far, and we'll of course have three more positions to do. But the idea that there aren't many wings, especially small forward-sized wings in the league, is something of value. But the other part that I would relate to that, and I think you've tied this in a little bit with efficient shot creation, is role. Because to me, there are certain roles that are more valuable and harder to fill than others. And so that was something that I started battling with later on the list, is how do you balance positional scarcity, like a wing, versus somebody who can create a shot for themselves and others? And it gets hard and it gets sticky, and that's part of the fun of this.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest lessons that I've had in the last couple of years is a superstar wing is the most valuable player that you can have in the NBA. The versatility that they provide defensively, they still have size to impact the game on both ends, but you can also put the ball in their hands as well pretty easily. And you also just get more value over replacement position if you have a superstar wing. It's so much easier to build around someone like that. Whereas, you know, certainly a center, there are a lot of good centers these days. And then the other thing you look at too is like, okay, you know, let's say you got a DeMarcus Cousins or a Jokic or a Towns, right? Those are guys who we talk about a lot. Really good offensive centers, you know. So those guys maybe can get you to 40 wins because they can really help drive an efficient offense. But if they can't defend, you've got only so much of a ceiling as a team. So especially if you are a big and you have that weakness, you're probably going to have to get downgraded there. And then the last thing, which you alluded to, is for me, the most important thing that you can have as a prospect, as a player, is efficient shot creation for yourself and others. You know, offense is more important than defense on an individual player basis, because the difference between the best and worst offensive players is much greater than the difference between the best and worst defensive players. And so efficient shot creation for yourself and others, that is the number one skill that I look for, although certainly versatility, lack of weaknesses, like those are things that come into play as well, or at least projectable lack of weaknesses, because there are few players at this age who don't have any weaknesses.
On a related note to that, the other benefit of efficient shot creation, for particularly for guys to do with the ball in their hands, is that it helps eliminate some of the variability. Like, you could talk about how we've talked about this with Karl Anthony Towns, that Towns as a center, and because of the way that they use the offense, he is more dependent on the system and based on guys getting him the ball and all those sorts of things. But if you have the ball in your hands all the time, those elements still matter. You know, your weaknesses and strengths still matter, but you have more control over your destiny. And that's something that I value. I've valued more since we started doing this podcast, and, you know, just broadly speaking, and because for the best players, you know, for bad players, it doesn't help, but for the best players, it really does provide value.
All right, we'll get into the actual list, but first, this from Quip, a fantastic gift for three reasons. This is a gift that people are actually going to use every day. It doesn't get thrown in a drawer. You don't have to go to the store to get it. Quip can ship directly to your door or theirs, and it's that perfect price point. $25 is what they start at for those secret Santas you struggle with every year. And if you haven't used an electric toothbrush yet, if you haven't used Quip, it's just a superior implement to a regular toothbrush. Number one, the vibrating bristles just get your teeth cleaner. They stimulate your gums more. You're going to realize after the first time you brush with one of these that, oh man, like I just, like, my teeth weren't getting clean before, and my gums weren't getting clean. I was getting plaque stuck on the gum line. And number two, it actually ensures that you brush for the right amount of time, because it has a timer on it and it turns off when you're done after 2 minutes. I mean, and you're not having to like scrub super hard with that toothbrush that's probably like kind of worn out anyway. And like nobody actually does that for 2 minutes. With Quip, you can actually like have the discipline to do that because it has this timer on it. And then Quip is better than regular electric toothbrushes as well, because it's like half the diameter of these things that have these enormous battery packs, and still like their charge only lasts maybe like 2 weeks, and then you have to recharge them. Quip, it's basically the size of a normal toothbrush. It's just got a little AAA battery in it, but that lasts actually for 3 months. And then when you sign up for their subscription service, they send you a new brush head every 3 months, and they send you a new AAA battery even, you know, which, so it's really plug and play, really easy. You can take it with you on the road as well. I do that. I have one just in my dab kit. It doesn't take any more space than a normal toothbrush. Comes with this really nice case as well that can be a stand, and then you flip it over, put it on top of the toothbrush, and it covers it up. So this is really a great gift idea for when you consider the price point, and that it's just a superior implement as well. So get started with them. Getquip.com/capspace is the URL. Easy to remember. We talk about Capspace all the time on the program. That'll get you your first refill pack free. Getquip, GTQIP.com/capspace. That lets them know that you came from us. Okay, so we'll explain our system as we so often do here. These players are in tiers. And so if you're like, how the hell can you rank this guy above this guy? Well, if they're in the same tier, know that it was extremely close. You know, if you want to get bent out of shape because one guy was in a lower tier than another, okay, like that, I understand. But if it's so close that we're basically splitting hairs, like, please don't go crazy on that. We're also going to talk about, at least for the guys in the top 10 who were on this list last year, give an idea of like how we think they have developed, give them a rating 1 through 10 of how well they have developed over the last year compared to maybe what we thought the expectations would be. And then we also want to talk about who we think we're most likely to be wrong about on this list, you know, who might drop out next year, who is lower that we think it could pop up a lot. All right, let's get started. Danny, who's your number one?
So my number one is
actually, you know what, I'm sorry, we have to say who graduated from the list.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good place to start. And also it's a frame of reference, so I don't actually, I don't have my detailed list. I have my framework from last year, so we're going to use yours as the basis. But okay, the guys that graduated, Anthony Davis was number one last year, and graduated means you're just too old. That's the only way you graduate. Davis.
Yeah,
was
we'll
number
talk
one.
About who like dropped out sure. of it just because they haven't been as good. Yeah.
Yeah. So Anthony Davis was number one. He graduated. Drummond was number nine, and then Bradley Beal. And was Steven Adams honorable mention, or was he player to watch?
He was honorable mention, and then the last two guys were player.
And
to
then
watch.
KCP was. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was a player to watch. Otto Porter was a player to watch. And yeah, I mean, you could have a very interesting conversation with some of those guys if they were still eligible for the list, but they aren't, so they aren't.
Well, and the biggest thing that struck me here is, you know, a lot of these guys were 2012 draft, which wasn't that amazing. 2013 draft, which wasn't that amazing. 14 has had like a lot of guys injured. 16 wasn't the greatest draft, but 15 and 17, especially 17 this year. I mean, this is, I think, every year it seems like it gets more difficult than it did previously.
There's one other point I want to make, and it's that should we have it available to us, we are using more than just their NBA career. So for a lot of these players, you and I have been familiar with them from college, maybe from things like the Hoop Summit and Adidas Nation. That all counts.
Yeah.
We whatever we can use to get a sense of this player and the trajectory of their career. And then the other quick thing I'll mention is the idea that I like to use is that like the outcomes, like a positive outcome, a most likely outcome in the middle there, because you wanted to be like, well, if it really works, this is what they could be if you know, it's as expected. And then that, because there's value to that too, because if a guy has superstar potential, that's important. If a guy has a high floor, that has value too.
All right, so now your number one overall prospect, 23 and under.
My number one prospect is also the only player in my tier one, and I don't label my tiers because it's only about if you can see them, right, argue them over, and that is Giannis. Giannis has proven himself as not only an all NBA player, but now as an MVP candidate, and that is something that none of these other players can say. And when you have proven that, like that, a lot of other players, like, that's what you're hoping for. You're striving to be an MVP candidate, and Giannis is already, he's doing that right now.
Yeah, and also, I mean, he is a wing, which the guys below him are not. Giannis, by the way, just turning 23 this month. Last year he was number three. I struggled with whether to put him above Towns. AD was number one last year. Giannis would even be above AD for me right now too. I think he's been better than AD this year, and he's still younger and also healthier. I mean, that's another thing you can look at with Giannis. He doesn't really get hurt at all. So and it's amazing to say this with Giannis, because we thought, oh yeah, he's got this low-hanging fruit as a player. He can get so much better with a jump shot. Like, watch out when that happens. Well, if anything, he's like developed much worse with the jump shot than we would have hoped over the last year, but I'm still giving him a 9 for his development over the past year, because I mean, you know, he's got like a 31 PER. He's playing great defense. Like, he is just pushing the limits of what you can be without a jump shot as a wing player. So he is way ahead of Towns now as a wing. He's way ahead of my number two. And I think, you know, what would you say, Danny, for how well he's developed out of the last year? Like, what would you give him a rating for that?
I had it as a 9 as well. And also Giannis being able to now play more at power forward, which is to me, his natural defensive position because it allows him to do more as a help defender. And I thought that's a better use of his skills than as a perimeter guy. I mean, you'd love for him to be that stopper, you know, the Kawhi Leonard, where you can stop the wing and be a linchpin offensively. I just don't think that's his wheelhouse. He's a little bit better as a four. And you still have to he's getting the best opposing forward on him anyway. So that distinction doesn't matter. And playing him at the four allows you to do the things like they're doing with having Middleton and Snell out there. The spacing has been better. And so Giannis kind of, he combines a couple of the things that you really like, where he can be a rim protector, but he can still, of course, switch out there. And then he's a terror in transition. So he's not a perfect player by any means, but he does what he does so well. And yet he can still, I mean, he was the most improved player last year. I don't think he's going to win it this year, but I wouldn't be shocked at all if he's in the conversation.
All right, let's get to tier two now. I had three players in this tier. Number two overall prospect for me, Joel Embiid. He turns 24 actually in March, so barely made the age cutoff for this one. Embiid was actually number five last year. Remember, at this time, he really had not, you know, he'd only played 20 games or whatever in his NBA career, but still looked awesome. And I gave him an 8 for his development over the past year. And I think the only reason I wouldn't be higher is because of just the injury that he suffered. I think he's, you know, the way he improves even on a week-to-week basis is really impressive. So he was the number two for me. The other two in this tier for me were Kristaps Porzingis, who is 22, doesn't turn 23 until August, and then Karl Towns, who went down from number two to number four last year. I had Porzingis four last year. He's up now to three. Any reaction to that? How does that square or differ with what you had, Danny?
If we were not considering injuries and the risk of recurrence and everything like that, I would have Embiid second as well. But I actually have him in tier two, but I have him fifth because of that. Because the idea being that if there is a 10 or 20% chance that he's just done, that puts him so far below all these other guys, because these other guys are so good that I'm okay. So where I'll actually, before we get into the whole thing, I'll just walk through my tiers and then we can talk about differences. So yes. I have my tier two is Towns. I went Towns, Porzingis. That's a splitting hairs between those two guys.
Right, Towns is two, Porzingis is three.
Then I have Simmons four, and I have Embiid five. And part of why I have Simmons in this tier is that the positional value and the ball being in his hands. The idea that Simmons, he has not proven yet that having him on the floor means that you're going to have a great offense. He has not proven that at all yet. But he is better defensively than I thought he would be, and I think that I see his part in a successful team very, very clearly. And so that's a surprise for me. I didn't expect that to be how he made it this high on the list. And obviously, if Embiid, you know, if he had the same medical as any of these other guys, he would be second. I mean, he would even be in the conversation first. I had Joel Embiid first team All-NBA. Like, it's not anything about his talent level. It's that the downside risk really does matter for me because he, you know, limitations. And remember also, even though it might just be them being cautious, he's still not playing on back-to-backs. There's still, you know, I mean, there was that back-to-back where they pulled him recently against Cleveland, and then he didn't play in the second part because of back tightness. So on a permanent basis, yes. But doing that, and I mean, let's talk a little bit about Porzingis versus Towns because...
Well, hold on. Let me react to you having Simmons as high as you do first.
Okay.
Because the reason I had him number five overall in a lower tier, actually, than these other guys, and the reason for that is just that I do not believe that his jump shot is ever going to get to be even remotely passable, even maybe, you know, from like 17 feet. You know, I think the odds are very much in favor that that's not going to happen, in my opinion. And if that's the case, you know, he's not, I mean, he's still a physical force, but he's not the level of physical force of Giannis where he can finish around the rim so incredibly well. I mean, he's not really going to dunk. He's good at getting into position for dunks and getting open, but he's not really going to dunk like on guys the way Giannis is. He's not going to finish as well around guys. Now, don't get me wrong. I think he's been much better in that area than I thought he would be early on. He deserves a ton of credit. I think he's going to be really good, but I am. And then you also throw in, because of the lack of shooting, some of the fit issues that he's going to have as well. And so I didn't want to trash Ben Simmons. I'm surprised that you had him as high as you did, because I think he just has that limitation with the shooting. If I believe that he could get there with the shooting, I could see him maybe being, number two. But I think he just, as a scorer and as a guy who's going to have weaknesses deep into the playoffs, that's why I had him a little bit lower. And then, he's also a little bit older than you think, Jimmy. He's 21. He's going to turn 22 in July. And
he's basically a straight year younger than Porzingis. Like, it's not a bigger gap than that, despite, and it's also people, like, this is why you do the difference between rookie class and draft class, because he was 2016 draft class. So,
let me finish too.
I thought
why I have Embiid above Porzingis and Towns. It's exactly what you said, that he is already playing at a first team All-NBA level. He does not really have any weaknesses. I think also that Porzingis, injury wise, I don't have him like that much better off than Embiid.
I think that's why I put Towns over Porzingis.
And this weird knee thing that he suffered today, I mean, we're not trying to focus in on that too much, but he just had like a non-contact knee injury and said it felt unstable and left. Like, and then Towns, I had him above Embiid last year. I think he's a better offense player than Embiid, but just at the center position, his defense, I mean, after another year now where he is really, if anything, not improved, maybe even taken steps backwards on defense, to the point where Tom Thibodeau said, hey, I got to sign another traditional big who can play defense to play next to this guy. Now that's limiting how good they can be as an offense. That's an issue. Now, the fact that Towns never gets hurt, at least, until Thibodeau is done with them, of course. But for now, at least. So that's why I went with those guys there. So did you want to react to all that?
I did. So I understand your criticism with Simmons. I think he can be a star without it. I think that his passing is elite. Like the fact that he can create, I think that he has done a really good job attacking space, which I did not expect him to have this early. And that makes him special. I mean, it's hard because there isn't a direct parallel with him. There are times when I want to say, oh, well, look at how LeBron succeeds. He's not LeBron. He really isn't. He's not Giannis either. He's something else. And it's hard, it's hard when somebody doesn't fit into those lanes. I mean, in certain ways, the closest analog with him might even be Magic, I think he's going to be a better defender than Magic. Like, I feel pretty comfortable in that. I mean, he's not the genius in some ways offensively, but I think that, and he doesn't play in the era that Magic played in, which I think was another factor. But I see it with Simmons. And yeah, it is also hard because you talked about the fit issues, and it might be an issue for me also that it's hard for me to separate that because he is already in a situation where those fit issues aren't there. But I admit that's not fair. But I just think, I'm sure there's a part of me that's coloring that in because it's like, oh, look at what he's already doing. And it's true that they fit pieces in, which 95% of NBA teams do not have, whether they're old or young. They just don't have a guy who can space the floor a little bit as a big, who is also the defensive stalwart, and then Covington, who is just such a wonderful analog with that. But I believe in that with Simmons. And then for Porzingis and Towns, one of the fascinating challenges of this is the idea of Porzingis, what his kind of ideal role is. Like with Towns, I think we see it in terms of, he's a straight five. He's not a perfect defensive five. But with Porzingis, like, you look at how good he is at protecting the rim and you think like, oh my God, like if he could do that an extra 4 or 5 or 10 possessions a game, maybe he wouldn't be able to sustain that. And I know he doesn't, it seems like every player alive, he doesn't want to play the five full time. But what you think about what he can do there, and the other way that Porzingis has really helped himself, we didn't talk about his development score. I think I gave him an 8. Part of what he has proven is just that he can handle a much higher amount of usage. He can handle the ball being in his hands more without a guy like Melo on there who can be a real like kind of fallback option. And that he has succeeded so reliably on power forwards is fascinating to me, because that I still think the quickness advantage is something he can use against fives, but the fact that he can succeed offensively at either position gives him a versatility that I think really ratchets up his value for me.
Yeah, and I had Porzingis above Towns because it's just like, and this is actually, I think you may see it this way too, but this is I don't want to say it's a divide between us, but just for my own personal philosophy, I really value the absolute dead bang best player on a championship team upside the most. And that's why I'm a little bit less concerned about the injuries with some of these guys with I'm more concerned about guys who just have weaknesses that I fear it can never be improved. So in the case of Simmons, in the case of Towns with his defense, whereas Porzingis, you know, one of his weaknesses for championship upside is that he's on the Knicks. But, you know, if he eventually got to a competent team around him, like the fact that he can protect the rim the way that he can and score. I mean, his big weakness right now is passing. And then to a lesser extent, just quickness on the perimeter. But I think those, you know, the passing at least is something that he can eventually improve more than I trust Simmons to improve the shooting or Towns to improve the defense.
It's also not as essential to his success. You know, like if Kristaps Porzingis never becomes a competent passer, he's still really, really good. If Ben Simmons doesn't become a good shooter, then that limits his ceiling in a much more direct way. It's remarkable to me how close these guys are right now. And I'm going to be so interested to see whether we feel that way at the end of the year. And another thing, I did not consider this remotely in this because it wouldn't be fair. But I was thinking about the idea that of where we'll be thinking about these guys at, let's say, draft night. And my thought is, of these players, the guy who's most likely to take a jump in my eyes is Simmons, because he can prove it by that point. And that's not, as I said, it didn't factor into my analysis at all. And because Embiid can't, to me, he can't ever fix, like, at least in the near term, he can't fix this concern. He can't eventually. I mean, we saw this with Stephen Curry. Like, Stephen Curry had those ankle things. Obviously, he is dealing with a sprained ankle right now, but that he was able to assuage those concerns. But it takes a long time. It takes experience. It takes, you know, you need to pile on that evidence. And with Porzingis and Towns, I don't think they're really going to get the opportunity. With Towns, I don't think he's good enough to clean his to do his weakness right now. Like, he's not prepared to do that. It's a very different thing. So it's going to be fun to see where these guys move. And the other part of that is Joel Embiid is the only one of those guys that's going to age out of this conversation. So we're going to have this talk next year. We'll see where these guys go.
Yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to that. And so I gave Porzingis an 8 for his past year development. And the injuries is maybe the only reason why. And the other thing to remember about him too is, like, it seems every year we do this, he always kills it the first 2 months of the year, and he seems to drop off towards the end. I don't know if there's any real rhyme or reason to that pattern or not, whether that will continue. But, you know, it may be that we're always kind of artificially higher on him at this time of year, just because this is when we happen to do it. But it makes sense to me to do it because at this point, because, you know, we have at least a decent look at what the rookies are, and we're not like so close to the draft again that you want to start getting into those guys. So that's why I kind of like doing it around this time of year. And then for Towns, I only gave him a 4 in his development over the past year. Certainly his offense, you know, really developed on the end of last year. I mean, and it should not be lost, the fact that he was, you know, 60% true shooting, 26 points a game. I mean, that's like, you know, that's unbelievable. And he hasn't had a chance to show as much this year, though he has maintained his efficiency. So finishing up here, for my tier 3, I only had 2 gentlemen in this tier. Ben Simmons was the first. He is age 21. I gave him an 8 for his development over the past year as well, because, you know, I think you mentioned the finishing is better. His defense is way better than we thought it would be based on what he put on film at LSU, although we knew he had some physical capability. But as Towns shows, that's not exactly you know, a guarantee. So he was number 8 last year, despite the fact that he had not played to that point, just because we liked him that much coming out of school. And so that's considering that now this foot issue doesn't appear to be a problem. And, you know, I think he fits pretty well for me at number 5. And then Nikola Jokic is my number 6. He is 22, will turn 23 in February. He actually was only an honorable mention last year. And that was in part because he was coming off the bench at the time. And that was more just him getting.
Yeah, I mean, the Nurkic Jokic thing was still going on at that point. All that crap. And with Jokic, you know, it was a challenge with him. And we saw the potential, but he had to prove it. And guess what? He's proven it now. I had him. I had him in a tier by himself, but it's basically the same logic. It's just that you had Simmons a little lower than I did. Phenomenal offensive player. The best passing big, if we're talking like center sized guy in the league. I mean, it gets complicated when you're talking about guys like like LeBron, but just a phenomenal passer, great attacking switches in the post. And I'm not going to write off his defense. I think that it will take some time with him just to get to get his positioning right and everything like that. But I think he can be at bare minimum like a league average defensive center, and that combination is awesome.
Yeah, and really part of the reason too why he's so high now is because, you know, that Nuggets offensive performance last year where they were the number one offense basically from the moment they moved him into the starting lineup. And his shooting has been a little bit better as well. He's been hunting the three-pointer a little bit more. He's been out these last 6-7 games here with this ankle injury, but so I give him a 7 for his development over the past year. That might even be a little bit too low. I am lower on him defensively than a lot of people seem to be. You know, the advanced stats do not agree with me, but especially again when you're talking about being in this stratosphere, we haven't seen him in a playoff setting yet. We haven't seen teams just go after him time and time again in high pick and roll with the shooting around it, and I think that he would really be powerless to defend when you really started to lock in picking on him instead of just kind of letting him use his smarts as well. So I'm and unlike Towns at least has the physical skills to maybe get there someday, and Jokic just doesn't. Like, he can't jump, he's not fast, like he's got decent anticipation and hands, but you know that can only take you so far.
Yeah, ceiling, I mean, it becomes less relevant the further along you go because you start to get more into the practical than the theoretical, but it is relevant. And also, to me, the idea that Towns is just quicker with the ball in his hands is another important element that he has that you can't teach and you can't get better at. And while Jokic is a way better passer, that added oomph for Towns offensively makes him more versatile. Like, they could potentially do more, you know, especially with the combination of him being a good jump shooter, that if he can attack closeouts entirely differently and all that. And so they're both players that I love. They're both two of the players that I enjoy watching the most. But I think Jokic is a different group right now. But there is no shame whatsoever being this high, and especially considering where we were last year on him. I mean, and you alluded to this before, but it's fascinating how much of an RPM darling he is so far this year. I think some of that also relates to just Denver having some second unit troubles for a lot of this year. But I mean, we can mention it. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I mean, it's there.
Yeah, I mean, did we screw up by having him that low? I mean, obviously it looks bad right now, but you know, just when a guy's like not even starting, I mean, it's difficult. And I also was just concerned that like he was, you know, we didn't know that Nurkic was going to get traded. There was no indication they're going to move Jokic into the starting lineup. Like, I thought he was just going to keep getting jacked around, and that it was really, you know, if he'd been playing as much as he would play later in the year, I think I probably would have just had him higher. I believed in his talent. It just was like, all right, you know, if he's going to keep playing 20 minutes a game here for a while, like you'd like to be able to divorce the player from the opportunity, but it's hard to do that at some point. So I understand why we did it that way. And it looks bad that basically the moment this list came out, he started starting and the team started dominating offensively. But, you know, and there's definitely guys that he should have been way above last year, but that's why we did it that way. It probably was a mistake though.
There's another reason, and that's that we were less familiar with him before he came into the NBA. I mean, as a draft prospect, he went in the second round. Yeah. He played in the Adriatic League. So it wasn't like we had this fallback of, oh, well, he was really good at Adidas Nations, or like for you with Karl Anthony Towns at Hoop Summit, where you saw things that he didn't show
Jokic
at Kentucky.
Well, Jokic did play at the Hoop Summit and was solid there, but if you think he's unathletic now, you should have seen him back then. And obviously the entire NBA felt the same way. I mean, if a guy just has a lower draft pedigree overall, and this is, I think we're going to come to this with Kyle Kuzma as well, obviously has well exceeded expectations from where he was drafted, but if a guy's a lower draft pedigree, you know, that does enter in still to having him be a little bit lower than a guy who's had an equivalent NBA performance to this point, but was drafted a little bit higher. But all right, let's do a quick read here, and then we got to get into like the real nitty gritty that just like, this is the section that just completely flummoxed me. So be interesting to see where we're at. But more interesting to see is actually all of these awesome prospects in person, and you can do that via SeatGeek. And if you are a new SeatGeek user, you can get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase via that familiar cap space code. So why is SeatGeek better? Well, the two most valuable things other than, you know, company and family and love and all that, you know, are time and money. And SeatGeek saves you time by aggregating ticket sellers together. So you go to SeatGeek, you get the tickets in front of you. You don't have to go to a bunch of different sites. You can have confidence that you're getting tickets in front of you that are going to give you a great deal. And then the other thing that it's going to save you is money, because it tells you which are the best deals. And so now if I'm like, hey, you know what? I want to sit in the lower bowl at this game. I did this for the Bucks Wizards game that I went to last month with my fiance. I promised her we'd get really good tickets to convince her to drive up from Chicago. Well, I looked in the lower bowl, found this awesome deal, fourth row on the sideline, even with the basket, for like $100. And the way I found it was I just saw the biggest green dot ranked that way by value. I clicked on it and I was like, oh, that's a good deal. I'm going to buy that. Whole process, you know, 2 minutes. So that's why SeatGeek is so good. And it's especially good when you can get that $20 off with your first SeatGeek purchase using the CapSpace code. And that, of course, lets them know that you came from us. That is the SeatGeek app, or on your computer as well, SeatGeek.com, CapSpace code. All right, well, so this is crazy here, Danny. My next tier, and now this goes down all the way into the honorable mentions too. So this is from 7. So I've got 4 guys in the rest of the top 10, but then my next tier goes down, including another 4 people. So I have 8 people in this tier. It shows you the depth, and I just was either too cowardly or it was too difficult to differentiate, at least in terms of tiers, with all of these guys.
You think that sounds ridiculous?
Oh, so here we go.
I liked the idea that you have, that you, we've had for years with this, with the honorable mention, which is players that you seriously considered for the top 10. So this is not players who are interesting or anything like that. It's how many. So there are 4 remaining spots, including those players in the honorable mention. I had 12. That's how close this is. There were a lot of, and there were guys that were right on the border where, like, I considered them, but I didn't seriously consider them. So I slid them down. So, like, for example, Miles Turner is in players to watch, not in this. And I thought about him for a second. We could talk about him. There's some reasons why I didn't. But that's how close this is. And it's players with very different type of profiles. I mean, you have some real high ceiling guys. You have some high floor guys. You have some uncertainty, positional scarcity. And it's brutal. It was fun, but it was a different kind of fun.
Okay, so I'm going to read off the list for these in very rough order, especially once I get below the top 10, it's very rough order. So these guys, I'm saying all these guys are pretty equivalent to me. I really struggled to differentiate between them. Number 7, I had Jason Tatum. A little bit of a different category than these guys, because he doesn't even turn 20 until March of this year. Tatum just has been unbelievable shooting the ball this year. Actually, you and I had an interesting conversation with a couple of scouts today about what Tatum is. We can talk about him a little bit more as we get in order with these guys and kind of kibitz about him. Number 8, I had Dennis Smith, who just turned 20 a little bit ago. Number 9, I still had Markel Fultz, amazingly enough. And it'll surprise you again that he's there. I'll explain why that is in a little bit, but it kind of fits with some of the philosophies I've been talking about. And then number 10, I had Donovan Mitchell. So actually, why don't we do it this way, Danny? Why don't you give the rest of your top 10, bearing in mind that there are others who were, you know, in this tier as well.
So my number 7 is Dennis Smith. My number 8 is Donovan Mitchell, which is a remarkable rise, and there are reasons for that we'll get into. 9, Markel Fultz, and 10, somebody you didn't mention, and yet you were higher on him and have been the entire time, Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, Brown is in this tier for me as well, and I'll round out the rest of this tier. And it's all, I mean, the Brown Tatum debate, I mean, we could spend an entire podcast just on that.
I actually have Jason Tatum listed at 11 because originally he was in my top 10 and I moved him down. And so I listed him out of the honorable mentions, but he is 11th.
All right. So here's my next 4 here that I had in this tier. And then I'd be interested to see who your remaining guys are. Devin Booker he's still only 21. He just turned 21 in October. He's been much more efficient this year, has taken some big steps. Brown, whom you mentioned, I still have Jamal Murray in this as well. That's a little bit more of a vanity pick for me, although he's quietly has made some big strides this year. He's kind of right on track, but, you know, there just have been guys who have come in because he was my number 10 last year. And then Aaron Gordon, who, you know, didn't know what to make of with him because this 40% shooting on threes, like, what do we make of that? You know, could that just be luck? you know, because he was not really in these lofty environs last year. But if he could continue to do this, which you have to consider as a possibility, then he becomes really good. So are any of those guys not in this tier for you, first off, Danny?
They all are. And I just have four more. And I think these are probably players that you're just a little fringier on than I am.
Yes.
But I seriously considered them. So that's why I put him in. Jabari Parker. Yes, the two ACL injuries. But something, and I just wrote this note down. Last season, Jabari Parker had a higher true shooting percentage than LaMarcus Aldridge and Paul Millsap on higher usage. That's how good of an offensive player he was. And yes, LaMarcus was worse last year than he is this year. But like, you have to think about the offensive player that he can be. And that's something truly special. And the other three, Clint Capella. I just think the idea of a true, like, capable defensive center who can be a nice role man pick and roll. He's in a perfect situation. So that I'm not counting that. I just think he's a wonderful center. De'Aaron Fox, when he's in that point guard conversation for me. His weaknesses do concern me, but I just have him in the conversation. And then OG Anunoby, because it's like, if I'm going to consider Tatum, if I'm going to consider Jaylen Brown, to me, he's fringier on that because he just has to prove, he has to prove it. And, you know, his shooting, all that kind of stuff. But to me, I couldn't separate him from that group just because I think his ceiling is in that same conversation and all that kind of stuff. So again, those are probably towards the top of your players to watch, but I seriously considered them. So they're my honorable mention.
Yeah. Yeah. Those guys are in my players to watch, man. I mean, God, it's just so hard this year. Just because you hit on them, the reason Capella was in my players to watch rather than in the honorable mention is just that, you know, number one, he's 23 already, turns 24 in May. And I get it. You know, he's got a 26 PR this year. Like, that's pretty impressive. I still don't buy him as like a great defensive player. You know, I think the recognition isn't quite there. He's not really strong enough to deal with a lot of guys in the post still. He's a solid switch guy, but not an amazing switch guy. He's had trouble with, I'm not sure whether it's like asthma or what it is, but he's generally considered to not be able to play that many minutes as well. He'll get in foul trouble. The free throw shooting is not great. But over and above all those things, I just don't see him as having enough offensive upside. He's just too limited offensively.
That's fair. I just think it's kind of a tough line that we're all trying to draw between these guys, and so I considered him, but as you said, you know, it's a close call. But let's get back kind of towards the top of this list. I mean, so the three guys that we both had in our top 10, it's interesting because we talked about positional scarcity, and all three of those guys are guards of some variety. Markelle Fultz and Dennis Smith are straight ones, and Donovan Mitchell is kind of a combo guard. But my rationale behind having all three of those guys as opposed to wings, which are more scarce, is that they have the ball in their hands more, and those guys all have serious potential to create reliable offense for themselves and for others.
And Mitchell, I even actually had him a little bit higher, but decided to move him down just because he didn't quite have the pedigree coming out. I don't know how much I can buy the three-point shooting yet, although that jumper sure looks nice. And he's really, you know, he started off very inefficiently this year, but, you know, he's had a great last month as well. And the reason I went with Tatum at seven, this was against certainly my own evaluation, and I struggled with what to make of him at this point because we felt coming out of college that he had some nice ball skills, tough shot maker, good footwork out of triple threat, not a great athlete to blow by guys, but it can create separation with that footwork and his moves. But we said, hey, you know what? He's not really a natural shooter. Like, is he going to be able to play a role? Is he just going to take inefficient long twos all day? And now precisely the opposite is the way he has played in Boston, where he is hitting threes at a fantastic rate, over 50%, leading the NBA right now. Although, worth noting, this is 47 out of 93. So, you know, if he misses 10 shots, you know, we're not talking about him like this over the course of the year. But he's also 43% on long twos, which, of course, is excellent. And I heard an interesting thought from one of the scouts we were talking to today, who said, you know, I think he's kind of similar to Paul George offensively. And I like that comparison, because George, for all of his athleticism and can get up for some nice dunks in his youth, especially, you know, not a guy who is an amazing finisher at the rim, doesn't just blow by you off the dribble necessarily, but a great shooter from three. Tatum and he even have somewhat similar looking jump shots as well. So I thought that was an interesting comparison offensively with what Paul George is, that maybe Jason Tatum could get to that kind of a level.
And that's part of why I had him a little bit lower, is because he doesn't have the defensive potential that Paul George does. He can be more of a system guy. You know, like I think that there, like I talked about with Ben Simmons, where he's in a place that makes so much sense for him that it can be hard to dissociate that from any other team. But I don't, my biggest issue with Tatum, and this was true going into the draft, where I thought of him as a more skilled Aaron Gordon, and that's before we saw what Aaron Gordon has been this year. And my issue with that is what we're seeing with Aaron Gordon, which is that his place on a good team is a little bit nebulous. He's more of a support guy on both sides. He is a good offensive player who can hit open shots. I don't think that he's going to create a ton of great looks for himself, like with the ball in his hands. And then defensively, he's a cog in the machine. He can be a good cog in a good machine. I mean, he is right now, but that to me is an entirely different thing than what Dennis Smith can be, what Markel Fultz can be. Donovan Mitchell is a little bit more complicated, and that is not to say that those players are going to reach that pinnacle. I do not expect it. If I thought Markel Fultz was going to reach his pinnacle, he'd be a lot higher on this list. But that ceiling to me is meaningfully lower in a way that made me uncomfortable, and that's why I moved him out of around where you had him and moved him to the equivalent of 11th.
Yeah, and this is one where, you know, I've been guilty of this in the past. So we both were with Andrew Wiggins, I think, last year, a guy who is only in our players to watch now after ranking number 6 last year. And don't worry, we'll discuss that as well. But for Tatum, I mean, just to be this efficient, to be playing this well at 19 on a good team, actually contributing to winning, the fact that he did show that isolation ability at the lower levels and in summer league, you know, I had to give some credit to the way he's playing right now. He also doesn't have the injury history of Smith or Fultz. And then Mitchell is older than this group as a rookie. You know, he's 21. He arguably has played the best out of any of those guys. I mean, it's very interesting that, you know, I at least went with 7 Jason Tatum, 8 Smith, 9 Fultz, 10 Mitchell, all rookie. You know, and maybe that says something about us too, that then, or at least me, that the next 4 guys are all guys who are established, and maybe we just, you know, become so enamored of potential with some of these guys. So
I want to draw a line, because these were guys that we got some feedback with the shooting guard and small forward columns. But my biggest issue with Devin Booker and with Andrew Wiggins at this point in their careers, they can do many things. Those guys are both exceedingly young. Those guys are both obviously eligible for this list. Is that what they do well? They do not do well enough for that to be a linchpin of a good team.
Yeah.
Devin Booker.
The good team aspect is really right. Both those guys.
If Devin Booker is your best offensive player, your offense is not going to be great. He can do a good job, and I think he can be a smaller cog in a bigger machine, which is why I have him in the players to watch and in this tier. I just have him lower. And also, he's pretty bad defensively, and so that is another factor in this.
More than pretty bad, I'd say.
Yeah, that's certainly fair. And so
he's one of the worst starting shooting guards defensively in the NBA, between his lack of athleticism, his lack of intensity, and his failure to execute it as a help defender.
Very switchable, which is another flaw here. Correct. Is that he's a straight two, whereas some of these other guys, I mean, Donovan Mitchell is way more switchable than he is.
Yeah, straight two in the fact that he can't even really guard a one either. You know, he's got to guard, he's got to guard whoever the worst guard is on the other team. But now, for Booker's standpoint, and the reason I had him in this tier still, and
we
really
both
agonized, would have put him closer. And, you know, if he plays like this and continues to make strides this year, you know, I would consider moving him up. But, you know, he's been on a terrible Phoenix team. He deserves some blame for how bad they have been. You know, he's still, even in this year, the number 23 shooting guard in RPM. And, you know, the on-off stats don't like young guys. You know, that's obvious. But Booker is making strides. He's shooting 38% from three. He's taking more threes this year. He's basically exchanging some of the long twos he was taking for threes. He's got a 19 PER, which is up from 14. It was actually below average in that particular statistic. I mean, it's a very interesting question between he, Mitchell, and Jaylen Brown. All those guys were born within a month of each other in 1996. I mean, it is worth noting that Booker, only 21 still, is scoring an efficient 24 points per game right now, you know, which he had not been efficient before. He's up to 57% true shooting this year. And so whether that sticks, whether he can get better defensively, I mean, that Phoenix ecosystem is a miserable comfortable one right now, but he's certainly, you know, is much higher on this list for me than he was last year. And that's mm-hmm. even considering that there's a lot more competitions here.
And another guy that you can think about, and I'm sure would be used in certain circles as a positive and a negative comparison for him, is DeMar DeRozan. I mean, DeRozan has been an important part, an essential part of some massively successful regular season teams. I mean, the Toronto Raptors are probably going to end up to me as the 3 seed in the Eastern Conference. DeRozan, and last year they were with a 4th or 5th, but then Lowry missed all that time due to injury. And DeRozan's an essential part of that. What is concerning is just that the idea of if you put DeRozan around better players, he is still useful, but you're not sitting there going like, oh man, he's the reason they're so good. And so that, you know, it might be unfair to say, well, a player who reaches that level but can't be isn't it that same thing? But that's a part of this. You know, the idea of like, where is he on a conference finals team? And to me, Devin Booker is probably the 3rd best player on a conference finals team, and he could become 2nd with time. Absolutely. He's 21, but he's not there yet. And some of these other guys, I think they could be that. You know, like, I mean, yeah. Somebody asked us on the Twitter NBA show, like, what is Dennis Smith's ceiling? And my answer, both thinking about it very quickly then and thinking about it a lot longer now, is first team All NBA. Like, he could be that guy.
And same thing with Marco Fultz, even with all the... And for Booker, you know, the DeRozan comparison is an interesting one. The reason I would say Booker has a little more upside than DeRozan is just because he can shoot and DeRozan can't. You can play him off the ball. He's not
sure.
He doesn't actively take away from the offensive.
He's also not nearly as good an athlete or have the size that DeRozan does.
Yeah, and he's never going to get to the foul line the way DeRozan does either, most likely. But yeah, let's go back to Smith and Fultz, because, you know, you had Smith at 7, you still had Fultz in your top 10. And for Fultz, I've been lower on him with this weirdo shooting thing that's been going on. I am probably as pessimistic about that as anyone. And so, you know, I think there's a reasonable chance that he just, you know, he has the yips and it's going to be a significant issue for him throughout the rest of his career. I said up to a 50% chance that this could be some kind of an issue, at least for him throughout the rest of his career. But still, I mean, he was the number one overall pick to me coming in. I mean, he looked fine in summer league before he went down with that ankle injury. You know, I mean, if the shot gets fixed, like, he's right back to being that player again. And I thought he totally deserved in this stacked draft class to be number one. But, you know, the injuries are concerning. The knee issue, he always seems to have like something that's nagging. And Smith as well with the injuries, you know, that's a reason maybe I had him, those guys, a little bit lower than Tatum, is just because, you know, Smith is now, he had the ACL. He kind of just, you know, takes these really scary falls. He's just so athletic that, like, you know, I mean, most guys like that seem to end up getting hurt. You know, Russell Westbrook is probably the only one where his only major injury was like a contact knee injury with Patrick Beverly, you know, not like a jumping injury. And so those guys' health, and obviously this shoulder / psychological shot thing, whatever it is.
Well, and also the fact that both of those guys have been apathetic defenders, both in college and in the pros, is certainly a concern. Like, those, they are not.
I liked Fultz's a little bit more, Fultz's effort in summer league, though. I will say that. But
I will say that too. But what those guys have, I mean, what are the most basic elements in the NBA that separates bad players from good players and good players from great players and great players from elite players is the ability to create separation. Dennis Smith can create separation on damn near anybody, and Markel Fultz might even be better at it than he is. And so what you have in those two players is that ability, and then what they also both have is the ability to turn that into something positive. They are both capable drivers. They are both underrated, I would say, at this point in their careers, passers. And so what I love about them is that it's different than Kyrie at the same age. Like, I've made the Fultz-Kyrie comparison now for about 2 years. And the reason for it is that they both have really nice and interesting handles. But what Fultz has that Kyrie didn't at that same age is he sees where his teammates are and he can make those passes. He did it at UW. He did it in Summer League. And Dennis Smith has a nice passing ability too. And when they're driving, they don't get tunnel vision. They can do it in that form. So when they're going full speed, they can find teammates. And the players who can do that often become stars.
Yeah. Of course, I mean, Kyrie also had one of like the 3 best rookie point guards ever, probably.
Right.
With Magic and Chris Paul.
Right. I'm comparing him. This is more like Duke Kyrie to UW Fultz and NC State Dennis Smith.
Donovan Mitchell, the reason he was 10 for me, I think, is the defense. That's really where it came in. And also, I think he is very high floor at this point. At the very least, I think can be a very quality shooting guard. And then, you know, I think the ability to maybe play some point guard as well is something that we didn't necessarily see from him. But you had Brown at 10. I'm interested to know why you were higher on him and higher on him than Tatum.
I value a guy who could potentially be a lockdown or close to it defender on twos and threes more than threes and fours. And I don't think Tatum is that guy anyway. Like, I think Tatum is more of a support defender than a lead defender. And Brown is not definitely going to be there, but I think he has higher potential there. I also think Brown is better with the ball in his hands. And so to me, the idea that he could become more than a dependent talent, like I think Jason Tatum could become an elite dependent talent, but I just value the idea of potential primary guys more. That's, you know, there's a reason why my 7, 8, 9 are all guys who I think can be, yeah, can be primary, is because you can't take that away from them in the same way. And so with Brown, it's kind of like you have that ceiling play with him. He's to me a better athlete, and he has that element too. And yeah, his jump shot hasn't been as good as Tatum so far, but I'm not completely sold, obviously, that this is Jason Tatum. And with Jaylen Brown, he's better with the, you know, he could create and transition in a different type of way, and that also makes him more transferable. Jason Tatum is amazing in the system that they have, but transportability matters here, and I think you could throw Jason Tatum on fewer teams and have him be this guy than Jaylen Brown. And we've also seen it, you know, a different kind of sample, but I thought there were elements of his playoff run that were heartening, that were nice. And so that's what it is for me. And with Jaylen, it's hard because you and I talked about this, not in necessarily the context of this before during the Warriors game, because we deliberately weren't sharing much about how our boards looked, but the idea that there isn't really a two-way wing in these kind of burgeoning, and a lot of that is because guys have to get a whole lot stronger, and that sure often happens at 24 and 25, and so you see the inklings. And incidentally, the guy who I think is the closest to that is Donovan Mitchell, but he's not a two-way wing, he's a two-way too. And so I think Brown has the most potential to do that. And again, it's the idea of a lane. Like, Jason Tatum being a better Aaron Gordon is, I think that's a very realistic thing. I mean, I thought of that as a positive for Jason Tatum when in the early part of the process, like, we had all those guys at the Hoop Summit and we could talk to anybody. I chose to talk to him. Like, I wanted to see how his brain worked. Sharp kid, knows what he's doing. And like, that was at 17, 18. But I think that there's a ceiling on that. And that ceiling is high, but it's not as high.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think Bron maybe has a higher ceiling. The two things that are worrying to me right now for him is the passing. And then I just don't buy that the jump shooting is, you know, what it's been, especially because he's only shooting 60% free throw line. His jumper looks way better, at faster release, all that. So that's why I had him a little bit lower. But, you know, I'm, and also that Tatum's a year and a half younger as well. But I think, you know, of all of these, the more I think about it, Tatum and Mitchell are the ones that, like, I kind of more adhered to the conventional wisdom on, maybe more than just my own personal evaluation. I mean, if it was just, if you wanted to say who are the guys that I liked here, you know, you'd probably throw Jamal Murray and Jaylen Brown in instead of Tatum and Mitchell. But, you know, I was trying to, you know, try to not do as many vanity picks necessarily.
Vanity.
You know, yeah.
But because it's,
you know, again, these are all the same tier guys. So
yeah, they are. And so, like, I think that Jamal Murray's an interesting one here. My worry with him is just how reliable he can be creating with the ball in his hands. And defensively, he's better than he was, but he's still not, like, good.
Yeah.
So
that's
so
my biggest worry about him, is that he's going to be so exploitable, especially like in an ISO situation defensively.
Yeah. So that's a concern. And then, so I'll mention quickly, the reason OG is on here is because I was thinking OG versus Jaylen Brown. I'm like, I have Jaylen above him, but I didn't think it was as clear a case.
Yeah.
And then,
well, OG, let me write to him, because, you know, he's only 20. But for him, I mean, the 3-point shooting 40%, but so much of that is from the corners, not a reliable college 3-point shooter before this. There's also, you know, the torn ACL could be a health thing, but most importantly, like, he doesn't have any kind of ball skills. It's just straight right hand drive. Maybe he'll spin back to his left. I mean, he's just in a completely, I mean, I think he may have more defensive potential than Brown, because I think he could guard 1 through 4 even, and he's got just an incredible wingspan and strength. So I think just like the chances that he evolves beyond just a pure 3-and-D guy, and I'm not even certain that he's going to get to the 3 part of that. That's why I didn't really even seriously consider him for honorable mention. Frankly, I thought he'd just, offensively is just A, what he's done so far, it seems fluky, and B, you know, I don't think the upside is there just with his feel and ball skills.
So here's an interesting question for you. If you had the potential potential for an all-defensive team. So let's say the fourth best defensive three and a guy who could hit open threes, but that's really all he could do, versus the 80 to 90% outcome for Jason Tatum. On the average team, which one of those two things would you rather have?
I think probably Tatum, especially because Tatum, I think, can still be a quality defender. And also, I mean, I think like OG, like if he shoots 40% on threes all year and he starts hitting above the break too, yeah, okay, I'll feel a little bit differently. I'm not buying the shooting yet, you know, based
well,
on
but
like,
so,
you know,
so basically my point here is that the defensive ceiling at the three is just such a valuable proposition. Like we have to, he has to prove it against these guys, and he's going to get that chance. I mean, assuming he has the starting spot, if he gets to play in a playoff series against some of these guys, we'll learn a lot more about what his defensive ceiling is. But I'm just so enamored with that. And again, it's the same tier, but that's why I had him here, is because if he can do that, that you know, that's a game breaker in this. And that's something, even if you can't get the offensive part of it, like the guys who can take away or mitigate the best players, like that's something special. And so I'm trying to think about who else we need to spend some serious time on.
Let me talk about Murray too, just quickly. Sure. Like, because, you know, it's early in the year, he was disappointing, was not hitting the three ball. Now he's actually up to 33% on threes, had some pretty big games. His finishing at the rim has been a revelation. I still am a believer in his passing. He's, you know, he's not asked to do as much passing. Now he operates more from the wing off the ball, you know, where, but I am a more of a believer in his passing than a lot of people in terms of like his ability to find people out of pick and roll. I think he can be, you know, a lead ball handling guard in time. So I and just statistically, he's improving, you know, 11 PR last year, 16 this year. And so I think he's right on track. It's just that some of these other, and he was my number 10 last year when, you know, he wasn't even like, he was at times a third point guard when we were doing this last year. I just saw the flashes from him, and obviously he came through more last year, but I think it's more just a fact that he's been passed than that I'm disappointed in his development. I think he actually is on track to being what we're hoping. You know, it hasn't been, he hasn't blown expectations out of the water, but, you know, I don't think he's been a disappointment by any means.
Yeah, the big thing, I'm a little bit concerned that he's only at 25% right now on pull-up threes, because that's the real thing that he could open up, and he was only 28% last year, but he has the mechanics in play that I think he can get better there, and that's really where his ceiling kind of lies with me, is if he can be the next, just as a pull-up guy, not everything else, the next kind of Damian Lillard type guy, then that is something you can't defend.
Right. No, I agree with you. That is really the key for him. And then Gordon, you know, don't need to say much more about him other than what we already have. This 40% three-point shooting, he was basically a 30% three-point shooter coming in. Long twos, he's still pretty low, like 36% this year. So I'm not sure how real that is, but, you know, he's shown more aggression in all aspects of offense. Still has the ability, especially if he's not playing next to Nikola Vucevic, to be a very good option defensively, guarding one through four, hitting open shots, like getting out in transition, dunking on people. So like, of all the players who are in this honorable mention, to me he's maybe the most likely to drop out just if he stops hitting shots again, you know. And he wasn't in this stratosphere last year, and so much of the fact that he's here is the way he's hit shots for two months.
And the other thing is, he has this intrigue defensively because of his athletic potential, but we haven't seen that as much on a game-to-game basis, you know, the idea of, oh, he could defend wings and all that kind of stuff, and that was a part of his ceiling value, and it hasn't really manifested this year.
You had Jabari higher than I do, the defense, and just, you know, two torn ACLs in the same knee. I mean, that just scared me too much. I mean, I realized he was number six for me last year, or I actually think number seven for me last year. And it's probably time to talk about why Andrew Wiggins, who was, I think we both had, you know, I might have had him six and you had him seven, and I think last year, and now he's not even honorable mention, he's in my players to watch. Why has he dropped out at this point to you?
Because some of the questions that we had have been answered in the negative. He is not as impactful defensively as his physical potential would indicate. He has not been able to generate reliable, makeable shots. You know, like he can, and he's too comfortable taking bad shots. So you have all these things. Like he doesn't. This is very Harrison Barnes-y.
And he's also, he doesn't necessarily make good shots that often either. Right?
Yeah. I mean, he has like those two or three like really nice dunks or layups that make you think, oh my god, like look at what he can do. do, but he just doesn't, he doesn't impact his physical gifts on the game nearly as consistently as he should. Like, compare that to somebody like Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell is another really high-end athlete. Yeah. You see it on like 75% of the possessions he plays. Yeah. You
plays
see it on
zero
like
force. Zero
you,
force.
You see it on like 30% of Wiggins' possessions. And if that 30% moves to 65, 70%, he's on this list. But we're getting into the time now. This is his fourth season. Like, and he's playing under a hard driving coach. He's played under a lot of different, he played under Sam Mitchell. He played under the Flip Saunders. I mean, he's played, we've seen it in a variety of circumstances now. And he's now on a playoff team. Like, he's on a team with Jimmy Butler. Yeah, he doesn't have the same.
He hasn't been able to contribute really that much. Like, he's not hitting his shots. He still takes bad shots. You know, I mean, he's just, we talked about him on the 15 and 60 that he's just like, you know, he's a guy out there right now at this point. And like,
and think about how much easier his job is now. Like, he doesn't have to guard the other team's best perimeter player. He doesn't have to be the linchpin offensively, and he's still taking bad shots, and he's still not defending well.
Well, and also, I think so much of the reason why we had him ranked that high was, number one, just what other people thought, and number two, the idea that, like, okay, you know, this guy's creating a lot of shots here. He'd taken a little bit of a step forward in efficiency last year, and that we felt like, hey, this guy is, you know, there's some untapped potential here. The older he gets, I mean, it's really difficult to see what improvement he's made over the last year. Quite frankly, he's a little bit better on defense, and just, you know, and also just keep in mind that so many people to me now have passed him.
So I want to bring up somebody, because if he had played regular minutes so far this year, I think people would be getting shocked that I would have Jonathan Isaac. He might have even made my top 10 if he had been able to play, but he hasn't. So he's in players to watch, because he is maybe the kind of the silver bullet for some of these things that you want, because he's a versatile defensive player who I think can switch and can also protect the rim. And then offensively, he's low usage, but could be reasonably high efficiency. And that's not, you know, a superstar type player, but we talked about how, like, I talked about how, like, Jason Tatum could be this elite support player. Jonathan Isaac could be that elite player, support player, but kind of more defense than offense. And if he can do that while playing some at the five, it's an amazing type of player.
Yeah. I mean, I think Isaac has all-star potential, but it's just is his shot really going to go in at more than, like, you know, 34% from three? And then also, you know, can he be aggressive enough, create enough shots offensively to really get into all-star capability? I think that the chances of that are lower, though. As you mentioned, I am higher on him. Another guy who's probably a controversial omission from at least honorable mention would be Brandon Ingram. Why is he not up there for you?
Because he can't shoot.
Yeah.
And he's not, he's a better defender now than he was, but you're not sitting there going, oh, well, he's going to be, you know, like a plus defender. It's possible, but I'm not sitting there thinking it's a certainty. And so the pathway for a guy who is not good enough with the ball in his hands to run an offense, but, and is not a reliable shooter and is not like a go-to defender, like, that's a very narrow lane to be a clear-cut positive player. He can thread that needle, and I've loved what he's done on drives. He's gotten better this year, but also remember how awful he was last year. Like, he wasn't a good NBA player last year, and he's better. Better doesn't mean good, and he can get there, and he's super young.
He has too far to go. I know he's young, you know, so that factors in as well.
Yeah, I mean, he's 20.
And, you know, he has a projectable shooting stroke that can look okay at times. You know, I suspect that in time he'll become a capable three-point shooter, but, you know, it's just, he's got too far to go to really be in the list with some of these other guys who have proven much more than him at this point. You know, not saying he can't get there, but it's just there's too far to go for him right now. And then the other guy, of course, why don't you tell me why Fox was in this category for you? I mean, he is dead last in RPM, but, you know, Smith is really not much better, but, you know, the statistics have not really been there. You know, obviously not a Kings team that plays to his strengths in the slightest, but to me, he was just in players to watch, and more in players to watch based on the fact that he's the number five pick and he's athletic than anything in particular he's done so far this season.
I'm still a believer in his defensive potential. I think that he can be a good passer, and I think he can create separation. I mean, the jump shot is definitely a concern, but if we're going to, I think about the idea of like an all-around point guard, I think he can do it. And in his jump shot, I don't think it's broken. I just think it's not good. Like, you know, it's I don't think of him as like an MKG type guy.
He'll hit long twos eventually. Threes, I'm not sure, but long twos he looks comfortable.
Right. And so if he can put that together, like, I love the connective tissue on him. Like, I think he makes good decisions. I think he has a good head on his shoulders. He's works really, really hard. And you see that. And yeah, I'm sure a lot of the, like, RPM type stuff is going to hate him because the starters on the Kings are manifestly terrible and their backups are similarly terrible, but when they're playing backups, it's a lot different than starters. So that's not a surprise for me. And, like, the box score prior stuff, I would guess. I haven't talked to somebody who knows this part of the black box, but I wouldn't be surprised if that stuff didn't like him. So, and he will, I think, just because he's, I think, a better man-to-man defender, we'll see if he can get the steal. I don't remember how he was on steals and blocks in college, but...
Pretty good on steals, as I recall.
So like, I can see it more clearly with him than with Lonzo, which I think is actually the comparison here, is because with Lonzo...
Well, he's the next guy we got to talk about.
So the jump shot for Lonzo is more mandatory, because with De'Aaron Fox, we've already seen, like, kind of how the rest of it can fit together. But with Lonzo, if you can go under all that stuff and he's not going to kill you, then it makes everything else harder.
Yeah, and Lonzo, I put him in players to watch, again, kind of more based on, you know, he was the number two overall pick. You know, I think a lot of what we've seen from his shooting makes me very low on the possibility of him being an all-star. And, you know, if you don't have all-star potential with the way this list is right now, you know, you're not getting into the honorable mention type of category. And just the shooting is such an issue. The inability to create separation off the dribble is such an issue. And another guy we should really discuss is Kyle Kuzma. Most important to note that he's 22 already, and has also been had issues defensively this year. I thought he's had some moments. I thought he did an okay job on Porzingis one-on-one, but, you know, as a help defender, he's been atrocious. Not really a heady defender at this point. But I want to just think seriously before we think about where he would fall in. He was a player to watch for me. I thought about putting him higher, but then I'm like, all right, you know, he's 22 and I'm not sure how much better he's necessarily going to get. But, you know, like, what is he? Like, what is he going to be 3 years from now, Kyle Kuzma?
So I like the effort. You know, we talked about kind of with the difference. He's not nearly the caliber of athlete that Andrew Wiggins is, but he uses what he has a lot. And that's not only as a shooter, but as an offensive player. I think he gets to the basket, gets into stuff a little bit more offensively, which is fun, like as an offensive rebounder, finisher at the rim, all that kind of stuff. And that bodes well. And ideally, he can turn a little bit of that to being a better defender. And I think he plays, you know, in a way that I could see him getting to be at least passable.
Yeah, KP wrote on this today that he has, like, get, like, no blocks and steals, which is not, of course, a great
indicator. It's not a great indicator. So the other concern is that he can be decent with the ball in his hands, but I think he's going to be somebody who amplifies an offense but doesn't create much. He's more of a play finisher than a play starter, and there's a value to that, but it's not the same type of value. And so that means, you know, he needs to have the right pieces around him. But the nice thing about that is he plays the right position, because at the four, you don't need a guy to be a great defender. You don't need a guy to be a primary ball handler. If he can convert those opportunities at a high clip and do everything else enough, you can be a very valuable player.
His skill level offensively has really been so impressive, both with
three-pointer,
you know, shooting 37% on pretty difficult attempts. I mean, he's coming off screens and shooting. His floater game is just outstanding. His post-up game, you know, he's especially against smaller guys, he's really been able to make some hay down there. So I think he'd be very solid offensively. You know, is he going to be a starter with the defensive limitations? You know, I mean, he's really, you know, he's averaging 17 a game, and he's been, you know, above league average in terms of efficiency, you know. So, but really, I mean, he's got to be a guy to get into this stratum that we are talking about. You know, he's got to be a guy averaging like over 20 points a game on this type of efficiency, and he's not going to provide a ton else at this. I think maybe he can get better.
Well, I mean, think about Jabari Parker. Like, right, they're not the same type of offensive player, but it's, I mean, Jabari was phenomenal offensively last year. He didn't make our list, and Jabari is younger.
Well, but I mean, that's health related to be.
Oh, actually, he's a little bit older.
Yeah,
they're born the same year. Yeah,
they are somewhat similar players. I mean, I think they're used very differently, certainly, and by very different coaches. But yeah, I think that, like, Jabari is an interesting comparison for Kuzma, though I think Jabari is still on another plane athletically.
Sure.
But they have some of the same defensive limitations as well.
Somebody else I want to mention is Miles Turner. So Miles Turner, I've been high on him for a long time, and the biggest reason why he is in players to watch and not honorable mention of the top 10 is he is not as impactful a possession by possession defender as I hoped he would be. He still has that ceiling of being a floor spacing big who can block shots, but there's a difference between blocking shots and altering shots and being a defensive anchor. He's also not a great defensive rebounder. And so that player, the player that it looks like he's going to be, is exciting and fun and a good player, but it's probably not an all-star unless it's somebody who gets overrated because of the flashiness.
Yeah, it's funny. You had Turner number 9 last year. I had him much lower, and my basis for that was just, even if he becomes fully formed, you know, again, he's not really, maybe he's an all-star in a bad year, but he's not, you know, a foundational type of offensive player. And that was hoping that he would develop, and I think his development defensively has been a disappointment. You, of course, like when I asked the question of, okay, who did we miss on, like who's most likely to move up, he was like, oh, you, Miles Turner, because you, I had him in and you didn't. But you know, I think that one is looking like one in my column at least, but there are plenty of others that we've been wrong on. But that he's a guy who just, you know, we were talking about him on the Tour NBA show yesterday of just like how much you're going to want to give him, and you know, I think a max contract would be way too much for, you know, and mm-hmm. So I think that's been a disappointment. And then even offensively too, you know, his finishing around the rim is an issue. His power moves in the post really aren't there. You know, he's kind of just a stationary standstill jump shooter on offense.
Yeah, and he could benefit a little bit from the center position moving towards him, of just having less of those burly guys, just because he can take advantage in different, well, I mean, but the quickness stuff he can use. He's just not great with the ball in his hands. So let's kind of, I think for the rest of this, we're only left with the players to watch. I think we should kind of go kind of position slash role by that. And so yeah. For me, let's start with the point guards. We talked a little bit about Lonzo. So then the other guys that I had on this list are D'Angelo Russell, his former teammate, who might be getting short shrift from us because when he played this year, he's been an intriguing overall offensive player. My issue with him is creating separation and the fact that he still sucks defensively, but he
health.
Oh yeah, health is there too.
Knee issues have bothered him, and yeah, the lack of athleticism, not a great finisher, still not even really that efficient either. Horrible defensively. They were better during the time that he was out there, and he wasn't out there for that long either. So I mean, I think he wasn't in serious consideration for honorable mention for me. So
and,
yeah,
and
I
mean, then yeah,
but
and then
deserves
the other,
a mention. He's only 21
yeah,
still.
Absolutely high ceiling. And then the other guy is Frank Nokina. Frank is better as a kind of, his point guard skills are better than I thought they would be, and his defensive ceiling is sky high. He is a different type of player. Part of the reason why he's in players to watch also is that it's hard to see somebody like him becoming an all-star. It's not impossible, but that's a much harder play than, incidentally, like somebody like D'Angelo Russell, who is a much better offensive player and playing an offensive position.
Yeah, you know, for me, Frank just I think he's always going to be too limited offensively to really get into the discussion of being an upper echelon type of point guard, though I do think he's good. You know, he was one I wanted to talk about just because I think he's interesting and he's had some moments this year, but he's just, and he's very young, but I don't see it from him off the dribble, getting to the rim, you know, any kind of pull up mid range game. You know, it's just, I think he's going to be mostly like a spot up guy on offense, maybe shoot threes and then, you know, be a solid defensive player and passer. Other guys who are in this list for me turning into shooting guards, I didn't have any other point guards in my players to watch. Fox and Ball were both in there for me. Were there any other point guards you had in your players to watch?
Nope.
So at shooting guard, Zach LaVine is still there. I mean, he was a guy who averaged 20 points a game on pretty efficient scoring last year. Got traded, but you know, he's 22, turns 23 in March. We'll see how he looks like coming back from the ACL, but he'll have all he can eat in Chicago. And then also Gary Harris, who is 23 right now, looks very good in the RPM statistics this year. Not a guy who I'm a believer in terms of the upside again, but you know, a solid starter, maybe deserves a mention here at least, but probably not much more than that. Really, again, you see not many threes. You know, we talked about Isaac, Ingram, Ananobi, and even those guys are kind of, you know, on the borderline between threes and fours.
I had one more, Stanley Johnson.
Oh, wow, like, really? Well, he completely dropped out. He's just, he got like a DNP the other day. He can't hit a shot.
Yeah, he's in my players to watch just because I see the ceiling with him, and it's just like, you know, again, it's the idea of a defensive,
you're,
like
you're
a defensive
looser
three
on this players to watch. I mean, this is how I see it. Like if you don't have all-star potential, you're not making players to watch unless you're already contributing at like a solid starter level, and that's why I put Harris in there. But you know, Johnson is not contributing there, and I don't think he has all-star potential. That's why I didn't talk about him. Among bigs, Lauri Markkanen, the way he shot the ball, moved his feet defensively, you know, he has struggled some with injuries this year. He's kind of dropped off a little bit since some nice games early. We'll see what he's able to do. And then John Collins just has been a monster in the box score. You know, whether he can be a center or a power forward defensively and any good in either of those positions remains to be seen. But a guy who I do think, you know, could really blow up as an offensive player potentially.
Mm-hmm.
And, and that was it.
The last guy I want to mention here is more in the Gary Harris camp, which is distinctly not sexy, and they used to be teammates. But Yusuf Nurkic is still 23. Like, Nurkic, he can be an above average, like an above average center. The injury stuff is a concern. But I mean, you think back to what he did in that time, both his rookie year, which has been underappreciated, and then also that spurt with the Blazers, where he was a huge part of that run they went on and then got hurt, unfortunately, before the playoff series. I think he warrants a mention and players to watch, though he will graduate from the list. It's just kind of as a placeholder of like, oh yeah, he's younger than you might think.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, again, not a guy who's not been efficient this year. You know, I think the defense has been solid just because he takes up space in there. But I think the way that he played last year when he came to the Blazers seems like more of the outlier in his recent career. And, you know, again, not a guy who I perceive as having a ton of upside due to some of his limitations. Interesting to mention here, the players who dropped out from players to watch who were still eligible. Nerlens Noel, adios, getting DMPs in Dallas. And now, you know, had that thumb surgery, which, you know, Tim McMahon said on a podcast the other day, you know, he probably could have just waited to have it after season if he were actually playing. Jahlil Okafor, same thing. Don't be a center in Philly, I guess, unless you're Joel Embiid. And then Emmanuel Mudiay is another one who, although he's played a little better this year, shot the ball a little better. Just, you know, he's not anywhere in the type of conversation with some guys. Does not appear on track to being a starting guard.
Yeah, I would say that's fair.
A few others that I wanted to just touch on a little here. You know, we hit on some of them already. Chris Dunn, notably, is not eligible already in his second year because, you know, he was old when he was drafted. Thon Maker would have been players to watch, maybe even closer to honorable mention if we had done this after the playoffs, but he is really disappointed so far this season. Juan Hernan Gomez, another guy, he was bothered by mono and he's now been passed in the rotation by Trey Lyles, a guy who when we redrafted the 2016 draft, we were extremely high end, but you know, really has not moved up much. And then, you know, just as guys who are kind of like, wow, we're really not talking about these dudes, that's not good. You know, Dragan Bender and Marquise Chris, top 10 picks last year, we're not even thinking about them at all.
Yeah, that's a concern. And then there's this collection, as you know, guys that you could call them curios that I just think they could be on one or both of these lists in future years. Scal, I mean, the possibility of him being a kind of a four spacing five. Who
yeah,
can
we're,
defend.
We're talking about the D-League now, right?
And Jakob Poeltl. Jakob Poeltl, I just think he can be a player. I don't think he'll be an all-star, but in that conversation of like a solid center, he's only 22. So I wanted to mention him as kind of a part of this.
Yeah, I mean, and between he and OG, Toronto has some guys who can kind of be underrated, but, you know, athletic, switchable, defensive players who, you know, can just play a role on offense and I think could be solid starters for some time to come here. And Julius Randle, a guy who is in players to watch, has kind of dropped out this year again just because I think the competition is so much better this year. But I mean, he's having himself a nice season. You know, whether he becomes a starter somewhere or not, I'm not sure, but at least someone that I think deserves to be touched on. Is anyone else that you think is worth even like some discussion here among these prospects?
No, I think that's pretty good. I think we've gone through it. I mean, there are of course guys that we could discuss more, but I think that we kind of went through the rationale pretty well.
So one thing I wanted to get into here is some of these guys who, you know, just tracking their history of the ones who are in the top 10. You know, we talked about what some of these guys were last year, guys who have been in for longer than that. You know, Karl Towns was number two to me his rookie year. You know, so he's been in tier two basically, you know, this whole time between two and four. Wiggins was five. He was unranked his rookie year for me. He was five his second year, six for me his third year, and now basically back to unranked, you know, players to watch again. So that's interesting. And Jabari, he was 3, 6, 7, and now again, you know, just in players to watch more because of the injuries. So that's interesting. And then Giannis was 5, 8, 3, and now 1 for me in the 4 years that we've done. So I guess the last thing we want to do here is just kind of say, you know, try to do a little self-criticism here. here. Last year, I was saying that, you know, the guys that we might regret leaving out, you know, Jokic, Jaylen Brown was one to me, and he, you know, has exceeded expectations since then. Booker was the other one that I said maybe he and Russell were the two, and Booker, you know, still is right there for me, but hasn't just like so blown up that I'm like, oh man, like I had to put him in the top 10. Like I'm such a moron for leaving him out last year. And then Ingram was another one of those guys who was kind of in there too. We felt like, hey, this guy has the potential to maybe make us look bad, but none of those guys have quite, I think all those guys have kind of been right on track with what I at least thought they're going to be. Bron maybe with his shooting has exceeded expectations slightly.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that's different about now is I think there's a pretty firm line of division between the top six and everyone else. And so
yeah,
it would be a genuine shock for me if anyone, maybe other than Fultz or Smith, just, and that's why I have them seven and nine because of Fultz's injury stuff, because those guys are all already really good. And it, you know, and also because, you know, guys like Jason Tatum, you know, he, to me, it's a high end support player type guy. You can't get into that top six. Even if you were the best guy at that in the entire league, you wouldn't get into that top six because those guys can all be more important. And so within this group, I could see it going a lot of different directions, but I see that at this moment as being a firm wall. And even like just with the injuries and all that, like with Fultz and Smith, I think it would be unlikely that if we're not going to do this, I don't think in June or something like that, that those guys would jump in.
Rank for me your four highest upside guys of anyone that we've talked about here.
So
just straight up upside, like absolute, you know, 90th percentile, 100th percentile, like what do they become?
Giannis. Oh, no. Yeah, I'll go Giannis 1, Embiid 2, Fultz 3, maybe Fultz and Simmons, I think, are right there. It's between those two because they each have a flaw. They each have a flaw that it's like, oh, if they fix that, they'd be unbelievable. So probably Simmons, Fultz, but that's probably where I'll just stop it there. I think that's fair.
Yeah, so I agree Giannis number 1. Fultz actually would probably be number 2 for me. You know, I mean, he could maybe be like a James Harden type of player someday, potentially. Smith would actually be number 3, just Embiid, just due to his position and also the fact that he gets like a little slow. I mean, when you talk about upside,
see here's the difference. So I think Embiid could win an MVP, and I think it's gonna be very hard for Dennis Smith to win an MVP.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't think Embiid will win an MVP because I don't think he's gonna score quite enough, and just also defensively, maybe even could win an MVP, but as far as like in the playoffs, I think he could just be like too slow, too exploitable on the perimeter by like some of the absolute best teams, these crazy offensive juggernauts that we have in the league. And then Simmons, you know, I just don't think the shot can get better. When you say upside, that's to me is just like, well, it can't happen almost. Like I'm almost at that point with his shot. And then Jaylen Brown has to be in that category too. And even Jamal Murray has to be in that category too, just with the potential that he could be this dominant player shooting threes off the dribble. You know, that could just be an amazing type player. But you know,
how crazy is it that neither of us mentioned Karl-Anthony Towns?
Yeah, just because I think that, like, you know, I guess there still is the hope that he gets there defensively, but I just think that bigs, I mean, you just look at like who the best players in the league have been over the last 10 years. Like they're almost none of the top five players every year are big. So,
well, and think about how long it's been since a top five player who was a big, who wasn't great defensively.
Yeah.
Like it's a totally different ball game. Like the pathway for Towns to be an MVP candidate is, Anthony Davis, the year that he was kind of a fringe MVP candidate, he was much, much better defensively than Towns probably will ever be.
I agree.
And so that's, you know, if you can't even use that as the benchmark. And so it's hard. I mean, and that is not to say, you know, he can still be first team All NBA. He can still be a fabulous player. But if we're talking like guys who can be the most valuable player in the league, guys who can be the best player on a championship team, you start to get those kind of concerns. And that's kind of the what makes the Towns Porzingis thing hard, is because Porzingis, I guess he's the defense potential is a little bit higher. And while the offensive ceiling is lower, I could see that, you know, you could build it. I think you could more easily build a team around Porzingis that wins a title than Towns.
So here are the guys I think that we are most going to be kicking ourselves that we ranked him too high, or at least I am. Tatum, Fultz, obviously, you know, he could just easily, like the shot just never gets better and he's just out of here. You know, Smith is not, he's shown obviously the amazing flashes this year, but you know, the shot, his inefficiency, shot selection, defense, and then potential for injury. You know, he's very risky. Tatum as well. I mean, you know, all of the rookie guys to me, that 7 through 10, Mitchell too, are just like, my instincts are just continue to be that he just can't be this good. And, you know, he certainly has been proving me wrong so far, but there's definitely a voice in the back of my head that's like, all right, you know, calm down a little bit on this guy. And Murray too is another one where, like, for him to be honorable mention over some of these other guys, same thing with Gordon. I mean, all of these guys really, I'm kind of like, Booker maybe is the only one that I think is like, he's probably the most guaranteed of all the guys in that tier for me, which also includes like Brown, Gordon, to actually like continue the performance that he's had. You know, he has the biggest track record. He's been efficient. You know, they're going to keep giving him the ball. He doesn't really get hurt aside this groin injury recently aside. So there is a ton of volatility to me below the Jokic level.
Yeah, the one exercise that I do think would be interesting to do, whether we release this as a podcast or not, would be just to go through, if we could do your eight at the end of this year and see if they've split, and if they've split, how that's happened.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've only got like 200 more episodes in the next year, so I don't know if we're able to fit that in.
Yeah, if all the second round playoff series or whatever round that is, they all go into sweeps, then maybe we'll have a chance.
Yeah. And what about like from players to watch, who do you think is most likely to move up there?
Kuzma, Markkanen is really interesting because those are guys that have a fit with where the league is going now, and they're players that their teams can use in a way that we can kind of look stupid. I mean, if Lonzo ever starts to shoot, I mean, he does so many other things well, but the structural concerns about his shot are absolutely there. And then, I mean, I talked about it a little bit before, but John Isaac, I just think that he could, I see the path for him, and he has to actually do it, and it would be so wonderful for Orlando if he could, but it's totally justified for us to not have him higher than we have him right now, but we could be sitting there at the end of the year being like, well, yeah, obviously.
Yeah, and Ingram is always a guy who, just because of his physical tools,
I'm becoming a lot more confident. It's funny because I started this a lot higher on him than you, and I think, and oftentimes when I turn on somebody, I turn harder than you do.
You do.
But with Ingram, the pathway for him to being a great player, to me, is very, very hard. Being a very good player, easy sale. That's why I had him second in that draft class. But becoming a great player for him, like, the theory of it, it's just too hard. People are like, oh, well, you could do this stuff. It's like, I I'm becoming much stronger on that part of this.
Yeah, it's just, you know, he has so many things, like the shooting, his age, his strength. I mean, I realize I said he has like so long to go, but they're just, he is the guy who I still feel like I have the most trouble just like saying, no, he can't do it, out of some of these guys who just haven't formed yet, because of the fact that so many people I respect believe that he's pretty good, the fact that he's made some strides defensively, the fact that he has shown some shooting potential, the fact that getting stronger could really transform his game quite a bit, that he could maybe be a 1 through 5 type of defender, even though it'd be nice if he could actually, like, you know, the medical staff work with him so he could, like, you know, bend his knees and get into a stance more than, like, you know, 5 degrees. But in any event, yeah, that's just the concern. I mean, and yeah, all right, I think we are done here. Anything else we got to discuss before we call it a week here?
No, I was trying to think if I have any stuff to promote. I mean, if you haven't listened to the podcast I did with Haberstroh for Real Gem Radio, it was a lot of fun, and it wasn't too much time. We talked a lot about the Rockets, and of course, they've still been doing well, so that's fine. And I'll have a bunch of other new content. I'm in the process of hopefully having something. This is the first time in a long time, other than the book, that I've had an actual backlog. I have probably about 5 pieces that are either done or close to it that will be coming out hopefully soon.
Yeah, and for me, I did a podcast called the Bench Mob Podcast with some of my former SBC students, and that was really kind of more, they asked some personal questions about just my path and stuff. So if that's something that you are interested more, just knowing more about me just as a person, and my path, did not really discuss that much like actual basketball, but feel free to check that out. It's called the Bench Mob Podcast. I retweeted it earlier today, and we'll talk to y'all next week, and hopefully we'll post this list on Patreon a little bit later. I gotta clean my notes up a little bit, and, you know, obviously any feedback, we are very interested in hearing that via Twitter, you know, or we can talk about it on the next Twitter NBA show as well. I think we can bring this list up then, and always an interesting discussion, clearly, with the tiers we had, with the great competition this year. You know, I'm by no means confident that this list is gonna be perfect, but we did the best we could over you know, hours and hours and hours of both this podcast and preparing sharing. So hope you enjoyed it and catch y'all next week. Till then.